Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hi, and welcome to Momentum Magnet. It is now the end of our first season. We successfully recorded 30 episodes. That's about 30 hours of airtime. We have over 250 five-star reviews, 31 guests and new friends, and over 100,000 listeners. So today, in honor of our first season, we're going to give you a wrap-up of some of the best tips, four things you can do today to put more momentum in your life and business. We've captured clips of some of our favorite guests to put this episode together for you today. And I think it's really going to be exciting because these interviews give you some ideas of a business strategy that you can apply. And today we're going to start first with Julia Becker Collins and talk about overcoming barriers. Why Julia? Well, she's not only operating and running an advertising agency, but she's also an endurance athlete. Julia doesn't just do marathons. She does 50-mile races, even while she battled cancer. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about that one thing you need to do to have better strategies with Marie Tirol, a Tony Robbins performance coach. We're going to dive deep into team dynamics with Michelle Mercier. And then finally, we're going to hear from some of the best business lessons that serial entrepreneur and private equity former executive Brian Greenfield, who currently is the president of Purple Carrot, the vegan meal kit box, he's going to talk to us about his business and finance lessons and what you can apply for your strategy today. In our season one recap, today we're going to start with Julia Becker Collins, who talks about overcoming challenges, a topic that was part of every conversation during 2020. She's going to talk to us about how she applies a very interesting ideology, the pain cave, to get her back into movement when she's stuck and to reframe her mindset when you get thrown that inevitable curveball. We're going to cut to Julia's episode. I'm sure it will be one that you come back to again and again whenever you feel you need a boost. And I started thinking about and asking myself the questions about why and how are some people able to continuously overcome things that pop up, bad news, life challenges. And it led me to really think about a guest that could exemplify what it is to be the type A survivor, who could join us and really talk to us about how to keep that mindset of overcoming no matter what you've been thrown. And today's guest does that. Her name is Julia Becker Collins. She's the COO of Vision Advertising. She is an endurance athlete. I mean, not just someone who runs a 5K, but someone who throws themselves up mountains over obstacles for hours on end. And she does that after saying that she's not a self-proclaimed athlete of any sort. In fact, she used to, just 5 or 6 years ago, feel more comfortable in yoga pants with a glass of wine. And this year during COVID, she received a thyroid cancer diagnosis. And now she's on a new journey of being a survivor, only that it's not her first run at a medical condition. So with Julia here as our guest, I think everybody will be able to leave this episode with a better understanding of what do you do when life throws you a curveball? How do you keep that mindset of a champion no matter what is thrown your way? And what are some of the tips and tricks she has learned on how you can support someone in your life going through a hard time, or how you can show up for yourself when life makes it a necessity. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Julia. I think that it's so easy that when the uncomfort comes up,
yes,
you get frustrated that it's there.
Yes.
But true performers and the people who you think, wow, they've achieved so much and they've gotten these, the uncomfort comes up for them all the time. Yet they don't get emotionally invested in it. They just deal with it and move on. And it's such a great lesson for all of us to remind ourselves. I mean, if you do need an inspiration, I thought that the what is it? The cowboy. What are the names of the two documentaries that I just saw?
so one of them was, what was it? Something to Nome.
Safety to Nome, and then to Rome, and then the next Iron Cowboy.
Iron Cowboy. Yes. Yes. So I think, you know, in ultra racing, we talk about the pain cave. And so, you know, you got to get into the pain cave. It's going to come. You can't have, I've never had an ultra race without a pain cave. It happens in training. It happens in the races. It's there. You know, it's coming. It's, you know, you're going to get into your own head. You're out there by yourself. Things hurt, your body's falling apart, your knees hurt, you're questioning all your bad life choices, you don't have the right fuel, you forgot to eat, you're nauseous, it's, you know, cold or hot or something, and you, it's there, it's always coming, you know the pain cave is coming. So it's just, how do you prepare yourself for it? Have you mentally trained yourself for it? Are you in a good headspace to deal with it, or are you in a bad headspace to deal with it? And I think, you know, it's knowing the reality. It's being a realist rather than a pessimist or an optimist. It's knowing that that pain cave is there, and it's not reality. It's just the current reality. It's not the end all be all reality. It's, you know, my body is going to hurt. It just is. I have skeletal issues. I have all kinds of chronic problems right now. Running with cancer is like running with a weight vest on. But you know, it's still better than not running. It's still better. Being in the pain cave is still better than not finishing the race. And I think part of this, you know, transitioning.
Actually, I love that line.
Yeah.
Being in the pain cave is still better than not finishing the race.
Exactly.
I think that's the thing, right?
Right. Right. That could be true in, you know, pivoting your business. That could be true in athleticism and your personal life and how you deal with a chronic illness. There's just going to be pain, right? That's just like, I think all of these things, the reality for me, at least how I think about it, is the reality is it's not going to be sunshine, butterflies, and unicorns all the time. It's just not the reality of life. But that doesn't mean that you have to be stuck in this dark place 24/7. It's just understanding, like, here's the reality, and sometimes it's difficult, and you can acknowledge that and be frustrated and have all your feelings about it. But then how do you move on from it?
Do you
make the best of the situation?
Do you feel like when you get through a pain cave or when you conquer a really challenging moment, do you think when you get to the other side, life is almost a step higher or feels a little bit better because you've lived through that extreme?
Yes. Yes. 100%. It's, you know, part of it is perspective. You know, if I've done that, I can do anything. So much so that, like, using the example of that race I did with the 15,000 feet of elevation in New Jersey, I had the elevation profile of that race tattooed on my arm so that I could look down and see it at any time. It's like right on my forearm. So if you ever see photos of me, you can see it. It's big and bold, just like me. And, I can look down and look at it and be like, nothing will ever be harder than that race, because that race physically hurt. And even just going through cancer treatment, I can look down and look at this tattoo and be like, you came out the other side of this race. And it was the hardest thing I had ever gone through.
Still harder than cancer?
I don't know if it's harder than cancer, but it definitely helps me to get perspective with cancer, because it's, you know, cancer is only part of me. It's not all of me. And so this race is, that race was part of me, not all of me. I'm still me on the other side of that race, even if I fail. And I'm still me on the other side of cancer, you know, even if the next round of scans show I still have cancer. So it's not fully defining. You still are you at your core, But I think overcoming a huge challenge helps to give you the perspective that you can, you know, you have the ability to conquer it. You have the ability to change and move your life. And it's not that you're kind of stuck in this whirlwind of chaos, which can definitely feel like, and that you're kind of at this whim of challenges and difficulties. You can shift and move the boat if, you know, you lean hard enough.
That's beautiful. What was one of those moments for people that haven't been an endurance athlete like myself?
Yeah.
Outside of my pain, although I do use my Peloton and sometimes want to die in my basement, but
there you go.
When you're, tell us a moment on that trail for people that haven't lived, like running a mountain, a 50K, which to me is just mind blowing. Give us like a description of that most intense moment on that path and how you talked yourself through it.
Yes. Okay. So I think I was in that race. I must have been like 20 something miles in. My racing partner was 20 minutes ahead of me. We had separated purposefully because she was kind of trucking at a faster rate, which is fine. And I wasn't fueling really well. You got to put yourself on a schedule of how often you eat and what you eat. You have to, you know, liken lots of things. You have to have a system for things because you kind of can't think really well when you've been out there for that many hours. So you have to kind of stick to your fueling schedule. And I was a number of hours into this race and a number of miles in, and I had not done a great job fueling. And I was having a lot of ankle and knee pain, and I was going straight uphill, chatting with some people that I was pacing with. And I just remember thinking, I am going to get stuck out here in the forest and nobody's going to find me because it is about to get dark. And my watch has died. I don't know what time it is. I don't know how far I've gone. I don't know how far it is to the next checkpoint. And I really hope that I end up with some kind of buddy for the next number of miles of this race, because I really don't want to be by myself in the forest in the dark with no watch and just a headlamp. And what ended up happening was that kind of all of those things came true. I ended up by myself in the forest in the pitch black with just a headlamp, with no watch, no sense of time, no sense of how long I've been out there. You're chasing cutoffs, which, because for these races, you have to finish by a certain time. You can't just stay out there for forever. So, but you can't, you know, run through the forest in the pitch black because you could trip, you could fall, you could get hurt. You don't want to go off course. You're trying to follow these little tags in the forest. And you just start seeing things. You start hallucinating. You really can get up in your own head about everything. And it's, you know, how do you stay focused and singularly driven forward towards that finish line? And I think one of the things I really love about the sport is the simplicity of it, that it really is just putting one foot in front of the other. And it really is just trying to get to that finish line. And it really is just, okay, what time is it? Do I need to eat? There is no cell phone service. There's no who needs me to answer an email. There's no, you know, what client needs my help. It's really very simple. And it's, how hard can my body work in this moment to achieve this goal? And it helps to really, for me, it definitely helps to clear my mind. Even in the pain cave, even when things feel so difficult.
I'm definitely going to text you next time I'm in the pain cave.
Did you enjoy hearing about the pain cave? I mean, that idea has stuck with me since I talked to Julia late last year. It's something that helps me get out of my own way when times are tough. And it really has proven to be successful as I'm trying to get my body back into motion after too much Netflix and chill during quarantine. That leads us into our next guest. I think you're going to find really impactful. And as we move away from getting out of the pain cave, which is really that yucky place you can get stuck, I thought it would be important to cut to master performance coach from Tony Robbins, Marie Tirole. She talked to us last year about making proactive changes in your life and in your business. And in her episode, we are going to talk about how to dive deeper into asking yourself the right questions so that you can return to better momentum. She's worked with some of the biggest and brightest executives in the country. And she says the most important rule of strategy comes down to this very singular thing, the better question. And that question needs to include, what do you want and why now? Let's hear from her.
I would say, first of all, ask yourself, what is preventing you from moving forward, right? Where do you want to go? So get clear on your outcome first. What would be the ideal vision for your business, for your life during this time? If that's too far out, think of a shorter period of time. What is ideal for this week? How do I want to feel this week? If that's too far out, think about today. Today, how do I want to feel? And what would make me feel that way, right? And if you are finding obstacles, ask yourself, what is preventing me? When you ask that question, what is preventing me? Most likely you're going to find an obstacle that is based on fear or some sort of attachment. I want it to be like it was yesterday. Or what if this, you know, what if I fail, right? So again, first of all, get clear on how you want to feel and where you're going. If you can't do it long term, do it short term, a week, even a day. Then ask yourself what's preventing, trying to identify the obstacle and change your story around it. Find to change the story around it, ask better questions. Well, what would it give me? What would it give me if I decided to show up, to fail, to give it a try, to do things differently, right? What can I get excited about? So ask yourself powerful questions, questions that are going to get you to a better place. Because the what ifs that we are asking ourselves when we are stuck keep us going down the rabbit hole.
That's beautiful.
If you want to reach out for powerful questions, I'm happy to connect with whomever wants more powerful questions and brainstorm.
Now that we've talked about how to get out of the hardest times in your life and what to do to help frame a strategy that's going to work, I want to cut to an episode that we did with Michelle Mercier, an executive coach and consultant who has spent over 15 years working with nationally acclaimed nonprofits and Fortune 500s until she opened her own dream business. She's been able to do it while raising two amazing but medically complicated children, managing debt up to her eyeballs, and handling two life-changing diagnoses of her own. She's a perpetual fireball and a positive thinker. And I think that this next piece of our discussion will really help anyone that's trying to put some of these tips to practice in their own business. Michelle and I dove deep into the power of the team, how the most effective leaders actually lead through understanding and not fear. The wonderful thing of this interview is whether or not you're leading a team or you're leading a family or a friend group or even an exercise endeavor with one other person, you could use these tips to push you forward. It's all about the understanding that is needed on what motivates people, how you tap into that, and how you use it for collective good. So let's hear from Michelle.
I'm a big believer that I don't really care about your title. I care about you as a person. So whether, you know, you're a janitor at a company or you're a CEO, I tend to view everybody the same. And I think that is because my background is so diverse, whether, you know, I came from the arts 20 years ago. So hustling that way with an agent and, you know, really, you know, hustling to for your worth and stuff like that in that realm. But then, you know, I went through the nonprofit sector, did a lot of work there. And as we know, sometimes there's no budget, but a whole lot of heart in that area of things as well. And then jumped ship into, you know, the corporate sector for a decade. And I saw all sorts of things. Some of them, you know, the best teachers sometimes with things that you would not do. So I found that extremely valuable, a lot of it. And then I parlayed that into the business that you see today. So a lot of different experiences, whether it's operations, marketing, tech, leadership, you know, I could go on and on, which is where I landed from like the business strategy standpoint, because I have the ability to take that 50,000 foot view level over things, but I also understand what it takes to execute, you know, in the tactical approach as well. So that's a little bit about how I got here today.
That's beautiful. So I think we find that often, right? When people have a wide background, when they've done a lot of roles and they've experienced working in a lot of different environments, they tend to come to situations with a more global perspective, which sometimes better perspective gives you, you know, more ability to influence. So can you talk a little bit about how you see leadership? What is your philosophy? What is your definition? And then we'll dive into some of the best practices from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, I was speaking to somebody the other day about leadership and the, you know, different concepts and our beliefs around it. And first and foremost, my number one thing to say is it's not about you. So as leaders, you know, sometimes you see that there is
it's
this
actually
divide.
Called narcissism when it's about you.
No shit. Can I swear? No
it's
shit.
A different definition, and it's a whole different episode with somebody with a medical degree.
You know, and I'm a big fan of servant leadership and the fact of, you know, for years. You know, I saw the classic, you know, leaders are up top on the point of the pyramid and everybody else is below and shit rolls downhill and like those types of sentiments. And I always thought I was a weirdo because I didn't agree with it. And I, you know, took motivating my teams very seriously. I took getting to know the humans on my teams very seriously, which was somewhat the opposite in a lot of situations that I saw. So the older I got and the more situations that I went through, you know, that mentality of it's not about me, it's to serve the greater good. Also, that comes from, you know, when shit hits the fan and there's a problem, that is the same sentiment around, it's not about the blame, it's about solving the problem, you know, and then fixing it on the back end. So similar sentiments in that first and foremost, it's not about you. And if you're a leader and you're saying, well, you know, I'm the head and I'm the vision, great, high five. How are you going to get shit done without your team buying into that vision? How are you going to get things done and motivate people if you don't understand what is motivating them? I would say, you know, when I'm working with leaders and entrepreneurs and all these people, and what always amazes me is when, especially if they have an employee who is troublesome or not getting what they need done or whatever that may be, or they're having a hard time with, the first question out of my mouth is, well, what motivates that person? Have you asked them? You know, because I think sometimes as leaders, we'll assume, you know, it's money that motivates them. It's this, it's that. And if you do not understand that person as a human being, how the hell are you going to lead them?
I mean, that's the same in a personal relationship, yes. Right? You follow the five love languages.
Yep.
You know, you could do the dishes for someone, and if their love language is a hug, it's not going to do anything.
Exactly.
I think the same is in the professional setting. I mean, not giving the hugs or doing it maybe the professional setting, but the same idea. What I thought was really interesting in that you just said, and I think it really has been showcased in the United States over the course of the last few months, is that you really are only as effective as the people that are behind you. And usually you motivate for a collective cause and a purpose.
That was great. I love thinking about how important it is to build the team dynamics in any organization, in any family, or in any group of individuals. But we're going to leave you today with some really practical business advice. So for the people that have been listening and are feeling that maybe nothing applied to you because you felt like it was all about mindset. Well, if you did have that feeling, I'm going to challenge you for 1 minute. I believe, and I've seen in my own life, and I've heard many successful entrepreneurs and self-help gurus say the same thing. 80% of your success is in your mindset. Only 20% is ever in the strategy itself. For those of you that are already working hard and feel like your mindset is there, that you don't have barriers around breaking through, keeping your team inspired and happy, or knowing where you want to go, then this is the segment for you. We're going to end with President of the Purple Carrot, Brian Greenfield, a serial entrepreneur who's going to talk to us about his top tips for finances, marketing, and what else you can put to work in your business today that will drive better understanding to give you higher profit. Let's hear from Brian.
That's really interesting. So if you were to say you're sitting next to a founder right now who's struggling with their business, what would you say is the number one financial marker they should be looking at on a daily or weekly basis?
Great question. Again, I really focus on just unit economics, right? And that's a broad term, but what does unit economics mean? It's different for every single business. For us in the meal kit, that it's just a straightforward formula, right? What is the amount that we sell our weekly box for, and what are the costs that go into that, right? So that's sort of like the gross margin, the profit of that box. And what I want to know is, what's the lifetime value of an average customer going to be? So I take the profit of that box times the number of times that they're going to order over their lifetime with us. That's a very important metric. And what I want to know is, how much is it costing me to acquire those customers on average? And am I getting a return for that? So as long as I'm getting, let's say 2 or 3 times return, and that's specific to the meal kit industry, every industry is different. If I'm getting a multiple of my cost to acquire a customer, that means the unit economics are working, and at a point where you should consider scaling the business, and maybe you should consider raising money or just growing at a rate, because in that example, a lifetime value over customer acquisition cost ratio, if that's 3 to 1 in my industry, that's good. What sometimes companies do, and this is what actually happened in past companies I've been at, is you start to scale before you truly understand that formula. And so at my last business, it was really the economics were not great, right? The margin that we were making on putting insulation into people's homes was pretty low, and on some of the other energy efficiency projects was pretty low, yet it costs a lot in overhead and management to facilitate these many small complex projects. And so it was really hard to make the business work at a small scale, yet we were trying to figure out how to improve the economics while also trying to grow. And that's a challenging thing to do. So I'd say, long-winded way of saying, nail the unit economics of your business before you start to grow. And it's okay to say, I'm not at the best possible unit economics. I know I could improve my margin. If you have a real clear path to how you're going to do that over time, that's perfectly great and might make sense to raise money and to be growing at that point. But don't try to grow until you've nailed your unit economics for sure.
I mean, I would say I use that in marketing all the time. I never have used the term unit economics. Maybe I should. I can probably charge more if I say unit economics. But I usually tell founders, do not start a second product until you can sell the first one in a scalable, repeatable system.
Exactly.
And also, I think a lot of startups will come to me and say, you know, I need a huge media campaign. And yet when you dig deep about the consumer drivers, why people want to buy the thing or the service, they aren't clear. Mm-hmm. So I said, until you can answer those questions and know exactly why someone is interested in buying this and what is the right price point to sell it at, shouldn't be wasting a ton of money in advertising. Advertising is a scaling technique, in my opinion. It's not necessarily your first to market approach.
Absolutely. And you know what you're talking about is another way of saying product market fit, right? And make sure that you've got the right product for the right market and you understand your customers clearly enough and why they're buying what you're selling before you start to try to scale.
That's great. So I've had the benefit of seeing the Brian Greenfield list of lessons learned from successful startup culture. And I loved it because it felt like it was a really deep look across multiple facets of the business. You've touched on some of the financial pillars. You've mm-hmm. touched on some of the product necessities, which is really understanding the drivers and the economics. Mm-hmm. But one of the most important thing that I think clients overlook a lot is the people capital. And one of the things you wrote down that I've seen in many businesses and even in my own, is that your weakest link will provide your most amount of problems. So there's even an HBR article, I'll probably misquote it, but it's this idea that if you leave a B player on your team or a C player on your team, that is worse than, you know, trying to blanket them with a bunch of high performers. You need to make sure that you're moving everybody up the food chain to higher performance. So let's talk a little bit about how you've instilled that sort of contribution mindset at the Purple Carrot.
Yeah, I mean, first, I just agree totally with that statement. Not just because it was on my list, but I've seen it on so many lists as well. You know, carrying a person who is not a performer has so many negative consequences. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly reasonable to take someone who's not a performer and create a path and provide the resources and the support and hope that they can ultimately get there to be a real contributing member. But after you've done that and you've come to a conclusion that this person is just not right for various reasons for our organization, you have to make a change. And that might mean put them into a different role if there is a role that they can be successful at, or it might mean, how do we help you go find a job at another company where you can be more successful? And you might just have to let somebody go because it's reached a point and you've given them enough feedback and it's just, they're not able to get there. So that's absolutely just critical that you do that. In terms of the question about how we seek out talent and how do we make sure that we're hiring and retaining the right people, what we've really evolved to at Purple Carrot is competency-based hiring. So we have a set of core competencies within the business that are things like team player, right? Problem solution mindset.
Almost right? Values, cultural values.
They're cultural values, but we have, we bring it to the level of how do we expect people at every level within the organization to exhibit those values? And so everyone should display teamwork, but what does it mean if you're an entry-level person versus if you're a C-suite person? Or everyone should show initiative, right? What does it mean to show initiative as a super junior person versus someone who's got a whole team and is leading a whole group?
Actually customize those attributes to all of your job positions?
We do.
Wow.
We do. And we interview for that. So then when we're interviewing, we have a team of people interviewing a candidate and we divide out who is interviewing for each competency. And we have sort of a question bank that we ask. So we make sure we ask similar types of questions so we can fairly compare candidates across a range of positions and a range of interviews. And those are all the sort of, I'll call them softer, their values and their competencies.
Our 2020 Momentum Magnet business recap is complete. Four business leaders, four different perspectives, and in short, a summary of how you may want to look at your business differently this year. I'm Karen Morales, host of Momentum Magnet and founder of marketing agency, Marketing Magnet. I look forward to hearing your stories of how you put these tips to work in your life and business. Send us a comment and a like and a follow on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. We can't wait for season two. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.